of Christ's life on earth. And where we are in that study is we've studied basically Thursday evening with Christ, with his apostles, when he had what we refer to as the Last Supper, when Christ was then went to the garden and prayed, where he was tempted to not do what he needed to do, but again made the decision to follow through. And then when he was taken by the high priest, brought to the house of Caiaphas and Ananias, each of their homes, basically had a mock trial, a kangaroo court, where they decided that he had committed blasphemy, or again, the false charge of blasphemy was brought against Christ. So where we are now is, if you will turn to John chapter 18, of course, we'll follow the outline that Nathan had prepared. But again, we'll follow mostly from the account in John. And again, we talked about last week about Ananias and Caiaphas, where Ananias had been high priest according to tradition. Because of political situation, the Romans had made Caiaphas, his son-in-law, the high priest. However, the Jews still recognized Ananias as the high priest. So they initially took Jesus to Ananias, then took him to Caiaphas. And after Caiaphas is when they decided that, or they again had, if you will, that trial where they said, oh, blasphemy, Jesus is claiming that he is God. That's blasphemy. So now they move him to, and we'll read where they're now taking him to. So it says, starting in John 18, 28, then they led Jesus from Caiaphas into the praetorium, and it was early. And they themselves did not enter the praetorium, so that they could not be defiled, that they might eat the Passover. It's interesting, just looking at that verse, here they are, falsely accusing a man of a crime worthy of death. They've had a trial contrary to Jewish law at night. And so they bring him to Praetorium, where is the Roman governor. And they're worried about not entering a Gentile structure because they're afraid they'll be defiled and they cannot eat the Passover. So you talk about hypocrisy, where here you are violating the law and yet you're worried about being able to eat the Passover. So they won't enter. Therefore, Pilate went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? They answered and said to him, if this man were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him to you. So Pilate said to them, take him yourselves and judge him according to your law. The Jews said to him, we are not permitted to put anyone to death to fulfill the words of Jesus which he spoke, signifying by what kind of death he was about to die. Looking at this exchange between the Jews and Pilate, what sort of relationship do you think the Jews had with the Roman governor? Was it a friendly relationship? You look at it, it's pretty much a hostile relationship. Because here it is early morning, and understand why Pilate is in Jerusalem. Typically, Pilate, who is governor of Judea, spent his time in the city of Caesarea. It's on the coast. That's where he typically was. That's where he typically spent his time. However, it's Passover. So in the city of Jerusalem, you have somewhere between, people estimate, between 1 to 2 million people. So because Pilate's mission, if you will, as a Roman, is to keep the peace, here's a possible situation could occur. So that's why he is in Rome, or in Jerusalem. Typically, he's in the Fortress Antonio, which is actually at the corner of the temple, which is actually for him a very good location because he can actually look down on the courtyard of the temple. So if anything happens, he can very quickly dispatch his troops to quell it. So here he is. You think about, for him, this is sort of a tense situation because you have lots of people, lots of activity in the city. Your job is to keep the peace. And now here comes the Jews bringing, to him it probably appears to be, some minor infraction. And like as you read, it's obvious that there is a lot of tension between the Jews and the Romans. A little background about why is there a Roman governor and why does he have the power over life and death. You have to go back to 2nd century BC, for a short period of time, the Jews did have, if you will, an independent state. Actually started with the Maccabees around 170 BC. They were actually kind of separate themselves from Greek rule. For a time, they had their own independence in some ways. However, the Sadducees and the Pharisees established a civil war late in the 2nd century. The Romans came in under Pompey. And the view Romans have of civil war, it's not acceptable. They came in, they stopped it. Interesting story with that is when Pompey came and went to Jerusalem, here he is, the general of a Roman army. And the Jews say, oh, here's our temple. And the temple was in some disrepair at that time. And he asked them about their religion and their teachings. They talked about there was this one place in the temple called the Holy of Holies. And only the high priest once a year was allowed to go into that. No other man was allowed to go into the Holy of Holies. You don't say that to a Roman general who has with him a legion or multiple legions. So Pompey went into the Holy of Holies. The Jews threatened him. He said, I'll level the city. They allowed him in. And since you're going to read Roman history, because at this time in the 2nd century B.C., what was in the Holy of Holies? Pardon? Nope, Ark had been destroyed. In fact, we never read about the Ark prior to Babylonian captivity. So what was in the Holy of Holies? Nothing. It was empty. In fact, it's interesting because you read Roman history and they talk about how Pompey commented the fact that here is these people that worship a rock. Because apparently there had been in the Holy of Holies, if you will, the stone on which the Ark of the Covenant had been kept. And so because of that, a lot of animosity between the Jews and the Romans because the Romans had violated the Holy of Holies. Also, as a result of that civil war, the Romans were aided by Antipater the Idonium. We don't really think of him, but we think of his son. So the Roman left, if you will, in charge of the area of Jerusalem, more or less, if you will, the civil government, his son, Herod the Great. So again, you look back and you realize just, again, that animosity, because here are the Jews that had an independent state. Here comes the Romans that take over. They basically stop the civil war. They violate the temple. And they put in power basically a person from Edom. So, again, you can again imagine that bad blood. The reason why Herod is here, the reason why Pilate is in Jerusalem, again, we mentioned the Passover. Also, after Herod the Great died, he divided his kingdom among his sons, or living sons. Herod had a bad reputation of killing his children. The area that was Jerusalem, that son basically was a problem to the Romans. So they removed that son and then basically took over, if you will, the Jerusalem area, Judea, what we think of as Judea, left that in the hands of the Roman governor. So again, you look at all this, this is a lot of tension between punches between Pilate and the Jews. Also, in terms of the Roman society, this area, this prefecture, was not, if you will, on the top 10 list of assignments you wanted as a Roman governor. In fact, it pretty much was the bottom one. This area was not very profitable to the Romans. It was always under turmoil. So, in fact, there had been over the history, about 10 Roman governors. Pilate was a governor for about 10 years of that time. So again, a lot of tension, a lot of animosity. Pilate was, in some ways, cruel, brutal, vile. It seems sometimes he'd actually sort of promote revolt within the Jews so he can come down and crack down on them, almost as a way of saying, let me show you the power I have, so don't make this into a big deal. So again, that's kind of all the background. Just very, very quickly give you a very broad brush of this situation. So here's the Jews, brings Jesus to him. So they tell him, here's a guy, or here's a person. And so he asks him, you know, what's the charges against this man? Why are you bringing this to me first thing in the morning? You know, I have more important things to do. It's the Passover. I'm here in Jerusalem. I need to be concerned about all these people here. And of course, they answered and said, they say to Pilate, or he tells him, take him yourself, judge him according to your law. He says, well, you have your own law. Why are you bothering me? Why is this important to me? Why are you bringing this person to me? And it's interesting because it says, we are not permitted to put anyone to death. And then it says, fulfill the word of Jesus, which he spoke, signifying by what kind of death he was about to die. In the New Testament, is there an incident where the Jewish court makes a decision and someone dies? I'll give you a hint. Book of Acts. Yes, Stephen. Think about it. Stephen is on trial. He defends his beliefs in Christ. What was the consequence? Stoning him. Yes. The Jews still had, in fact, think about Jesus and the woman caught in adultery. What were they about to do? Stone. They're about to stone her. So the Jews did have, if you will, a way of executing someone by stoning. But the one thing they could not do was crucify a man to death. That was specifically for the Romans. Crucifixion was for a specific crime, and that was treason. The Romans left it for that one crime, because to them that was the absolute worst crime, was treason against the state. You think of it, as an empire, that's important, because the last thing you want is sedition. Especially when you're controlling all these different countries, all these different societies, you want to make sure people understand that is not allowed. Why do you think the Jews wanted Christ crucified? If they wanted him dead, they could have stoned him. So why crucifixion? That's an open question. Why do you think they wanted crucifixion? Good point. One is they kind of threw it off into the Romans' hands, because now at the end of the day they can say, well, we didn't kill him, the Romans killed him. Why else? Why specifically crucifixion? Pardon? We'll talk about that too. But why choose crucifixion? Yes, it was the worst possible crime or worst possible death. Pardon?
Shame you have to stop the movement.
Exactly. Very good. Thank you. The intent the Romans had of this was to make an example of someone. And that was what I think my opinion is. Also what the Jews wanted. They saw Christ establishing a following. They thought if Christ is crucified, those people see that death, therefore they'll no longer follow Christ, because just the fear of crucifixion would be enough to drive them to basically despair, to give up the movement. As we said before, I just remind you, crucifixion was not intended to kill a man quickly. To the contrary, the intent was to keep the man alive as long as possible in the most painful situation, literally to break him down to nothing. And so you literally give up and die. So that's the situation we have with them. So they go to Pilate, and Pilate's the only one that has the power to make that decision. He's the only one that can say, yes, you can crucify Christ. So continue on in following the outline, says, so, if you remember their charges against Jesus is blasphemy. Do you think Pilate cares about blasphemy? Yeah. In fact, that's why Pilate says, if this is your problem, this is your law, you know, follow your law. So what are they going to have to tell Pilate in order to get him to crucify or to give the order to crucify Jesus? What do they have to have Jesus charged with? Yeah, treason. Basically, something against the state. And we read, it says, "And they began accusing him, saying, 'We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar and saying that he himself is Christ the King.'" Probably the most important one to Pilate was the taxes. Even back then, you had to pay your taxes. But again, that's part of Pilate's responsibility. So now, if you notice, they sort of change the charges. They say, here's this person saying, don't pay taxes to Caesar, and claiming to be king. Continue on. So, therefore, Pilate entered again into the praetorium and summoned Jesus and questioned him. "Are you king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Are you saying this on your own initiative, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate answered, I am not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and chief priests deliver you to me. What have you done?" It's interesting here when Pilate asks those questions. It appears these are not rhetorical questions. He's actually asking, what have you done? You'd have to think about, Pilate was very aware of sedition, or tried to be aware of sedition. And so now here's this Jesus that he hasn't heard about. So he really has to be questioning in his mind, why are they bringing this man to him? And so Jesus, when Pilate asks him the question, Jesus responds and saying, do you know something about me, or is someone you telling you stories, really, is what Jesus asks. And of course, Pilate's response is, am I a Jew? Do you think I know what the Jews do? Jesus says, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would be fighting so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm." Therefore, Pilate said to him, "So you are a king." Jesus answered, "You say correctly that I am a king. For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who is in the truth hears my voice." I don't know if you ever watched any of the trials they had of some of the terrorists. You ever, or if you have, what are some of the statements those people tend to make when they're brought on trial about their view of the future or their view of what will happen if something happens to them? Don't they usually threaten? They say, well, if something happens to me, something worse will happen to you. Isn't that sort of the type of thing? It's the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. A lot of the terrorists, when they talk about, the future movement, that they would become martyrs. Isn't that usually what we see? Or we see when someone is brought who is claiming to be the leader of some group, that when he's threatened, he says, if anything happens to me, basically Armageddon, if you will. Is that usually the picture? What's Jesus saying here? When Pilate asks, "Are you a king?" He says, "You said that." But Jesus says, If I was a king of a kingdom here, wouldn't my people already be here? Wouldn't my people already be fighting for me? But they're not. And you have to think about this has to have an impact on Pilate. Like we mentioned, Pilate was a vile, violent man. Pilate's a fairly complex person. It's interesting when you look at Pilate. Very complex person because he sees something different in Jesus. This is not your, zealot, if you will. Remember, there was that group called zealots that were very, very, very active trying to overthrow the Roman government to get them out, to get back, to return the free state of Israel. But he's not that. He's a very quiet, very logical man. And obviously this now has an impact on Pilate. And so you have to wonder what's going through Pilate's mind about, why are they bringing this man to me? I don't see a threat to Rome. So why is he here? And so when Jesus talks about know, he says to Pilate, "Now I'm here because I witnessed to the truth." What's Pilate's comment? What is truth? You have to kind of wonder about that. What did he mean by that? Did he mean, in essence, it's almost like 2,000 years later, we're in this postmodernist age of people argue what is truth. Is it, is truth your perception? Is truth reality? You know, Pilate's sort of struggling at this point in time saying, you have to kind of wonder if he's saying, if they're arguing about the definition of truth, is that why you're here? This is, you know, why did the Jews bring you to me if this is an argument of what you perceive as truth? So Pilate says that. It's interesting when Pilate says that, because it's obviously a rhetorical question. Because he says it and then he steps out. You have to wonder if Pilate had stayed for the answer, what would have changed? Yes. Well, think about it. We talked about Herod the Great. Understand why Herod the Great was in charge. In fact, understand how Rome ruled. The Greeks, when they came in, they would bring in Greek culture. They try to unify the world with Greek culture. That's why the New Testament is written in Greek. That's why in the first century, everyone spoke Greek. Although Rome was a Latin society, everyone spoke Greek because of the prior empire. Greece had spread their culture throughout the world. Roman was more pragmatic. Rome's view was, if you have a society and it's functioning, we'll leave it alone. Do what you want to do as long as you're peaceful and you pay taxes. Simple as that. That's pretty much, they were, if in essence, hands off. And so, for example, with Herod the Great and his family, as long as they kept peace, as long as the taxes were flowing, Rome was happy. It's when there was problems that they would then bring in someone else and say, if you can do a better job, fine. If you can get better taxes, if you can make sure the army doesn't have to come, it's yours. So that's kind of, again, the Roman society. So as you mentioned, truth to them, again, 2,000 years later, is the same as today. People will argue what is truth. And I think Pilate, because of all the politics and stuff, it was a rhetorical question. So Pilate said to him, what is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said, I find no guilt in him. Here you are claiming this man of sedition. I don't see sedition. I don't see, there's nothing here that gives me any clue as to your claim against this man. How do you think the chief priests and elders were going to respond to that? Here you bring him to the Roman emperor, you want them to rubber stamp his death. He comes back and says, what is it you want me to do? Yeah. Sad to say, I have to agree with you 100%. Bill made a point, if you didn't hear Bill, was you look at Roman society, they didn't care about truth. As long as everyone was happy, everyone was quiet, and everyone paid their taxes, Rome was happy. And sad to say, we're kind of going down that, well, we're not kind of, we are going down that path. Yes. I, It's funny you should say that, because I thought about that too, but the problem is when Pilate said, what is truth, he left. If he had stayed, I can say, yes, I think he was looking for truth. But I think he said it as a rhetorical question, saying, here you're saying you stand for the truth. There's all these other people that claim to know the truth. The Jews are claiming they know the truth. Rome claims to know the truth, and yet, no, I don't think so. Again, in my opinion. Otherwise, he would have stayed. So he goes out to the chief priest, says, I find nothing wrong with this man. I find no guilt. Continue on following Nathan's outline. The chief priest began to accuse him harshly. And while he was being accused by the chief priests and elders, he did not answer. Then Pilate questioned him again, saying, do you not answer? See how many charges they bring against you? And he did not answer him with regards to even a single charge, so the governor was quite amazed. So as Bill mentioned, plan B. So they're bringing all these charges against Jesus. We're not told what they are, but we know none of them are true. And so Jesus does the right thing. Doesn't say anything. Oh, he did this, oh, he did that, he did this, he's this kind of person, and Jesus is just staying there. What's the normal human reaction when someone lies against you? You become defensive. Oh, that's not true, or that's not quite true. But Jesus just literally stood there and took it. And it amazes Pilate. Because you think about it, here they're claiming this is a, if you will, a rebel rouser. And Pilate has some experience with rebel rousers, who typically are very passionate, very emotional, are going to defend themselves. And Jesus just stands there. Because he knows they're not true. And Pilate can sense very quickly that they're not true either. At least that's my opinion. I think Pilate can see in this situation, none of this is true. There's something else. There's some other reason why they want Jesus, not just dead, but want Jesus crucified. And it has nothing to do with Rome. It has nothing to do with sedition. But they kept insisting, saying, he stirs up the people, teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee, even as far as this place. But when Pilate heard it, he asked whether this man was a Galilean. When they learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself was also in Jerusalem at that time. So, here is Pilate with a situation he really doesn't want to handle. What does he do? Passes the buck. Don't we all do that? When you have a situation, you don't know what to do, you find someone else to take care of it. And so, in their speech, they're saying, oh, you know, here's Jesus, he's all over the place, he's spreading sedition. And remember, Pilate has jurisdiction over Judea. Again, there was the kingdom of Herod the Great. It was divided into four kingdoms. The one that was the son that had the kingdom over Judea basically was a failure. So a Roman had to step in. The one to the north, Galilee, that ruler was actually fairly good, fairly controlled, kept the peace, and that was Herod's son, this Herod Antipas. And that's the Herod that is in Jerusalem. That's also the Herod that beheaded John the Baptist. So you hear the name Herod all the time. Remember, Herod is almost like a family name. So there's Herod the Great, and then his sons and his grandsons. So when you hear the name Herod, you have to think which Herod it is. But this was the Herod that beheaded John the Baptist. Because it is Passover, he also is in Jerusalem. So here's Pilate. They're told he is from Galilee. His answer is, oh, I can pass the buck. If he's a Galilean, then Herod is here. It's his responsibility. It's his citizen. Pass it to him. Oh, by the way, and since he's in town, just bring it over him. So they do. They take Jesus. And think about this. Do you think they're handling him kindly? Go ahead. Yes. Actually, make sure I pronounce this right. He is from Edom. And again, going back to the second century, Edom's basically is the kingdom of Edom was conquered by the Jews in the second century. They then proselyted the Edomites. And so Herod's family converted to Judaism, which most people believe that, yes, Herod the Great was circumcised, his family was circumcised. He also married into the family of the high priest. So I say all that to say, yes, technically he was a Jew. Did he practice? No. I mean, you look at his family history, and in fact, look at Herod Antipas, who had his brother's wife. That's part of the reason why John brought that up, because technically, although they claim to be a Jew because of rule, technically they should be following the Jewish law, which says you cannot have your brother's wife. So that's why he could accuse them of the sin. But if you look at their actions, they were an immoral group of people. That's kind of who they were or what they did. So, and that's also part of the reason why they were Jews, so that they could rule, if you will give some credence to their rule. To say, yes, we are Jews, therefore we have the right to be kings. The Jews really didn't agree to that. In fact, that's why Herod the Great is famous for building. In fact, Herod the Great rebuilt the temple in a way that, if you will, appease the Jewish people. In fact, it was a typical government project. I think it lasted 63 years to rebuild the temple. Magnificent work. It's the fact that if you ever read Wonders of the Ancient World, it's viewed as one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. That's how, I think the thing covered like 40-some-odd acres. The buildings, the grounds, everything. Again, it was basically to appease the Jews. Of course, to give you an idea of the relationship between the Herods and the Jews, everyone heard of Masada? Who here has heard of Masada? Okay. It's a, if you think of it, it's actually a, I guess you'd call it a butte, which is a natural formation. It's a stone formation. It literally is a natural fortress. In fact, we hear about, after Jerusalem was destroyed, how a band of, I guess, about 50 zealots were able to hold off the Roman army because of that structure. Herod had that mountain, if you had a palace built into that mountain for him, because he thought that someday he may have to retreat there. Not because of the Romans, but because of the Jews. His view is that he'd go in there, stay there. In fact, he probably had supplies for a year and live very comfortably until Romans or someone came to save him. So although the Herods were kings, they also had a plan B if the Jews ever rose against them. So again, you see that relationship. So here is Pilate with Jesus. The Jews bring him to Pilate. Pilate says, I see no reason that this man should be sentenced to death. Hands him over to Herod. And Herod's there. So let's continue on. So here we are now in the city of Jerusalem. We've gone from the house of the high priest, both the house of Ananias, house of Caiaphas. We've gone into the Roman Praetorium. And now we're going into wherever the palace, if you will, of Herod. Now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time, because he had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by him. And he questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and the scribes were standing there, accusing him vehemently. And Herod, with his soldiers, after teasing him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. Here we're told that Herod, what was Herod interested in? A performance. Heard about Jesus, heard about his miracles. He wanted to be entertained. He wanted to see something. He wanted to see, pardon the expression, he wanted to see magic. He didn't care what Jesus was teaching. He didn't care Jesus' purpose. He wanted to see magic. And you think about it, what was the purpose of Jesus' miracles? Confirm God, to confirm that he was both sent by God and to confirm that he was God or is God. That's not what Herod wanted. Herod wanted entertainment, and Jesus would not entertain him. And of course, here is Jesus. Here is, again, the high priest, the elders. the teachers, the religious, if you will, the religious group, religious leaders, constantly harassing him. As it says, vehemently, basically tearing him down. So, what does Herod do? Yeah, puts the ball back into Pilate's court, saying, in fact, it's interesting what he does. It says they mock him, he and his soldiers, they mock him, treat him with contempt, and they put on a gorgeous robe. Literally, they dress him up like a king. And they send him back to Pilate. Because again, the Jews obviously are again accusing him of treason. Herod is able to say, well, if it's treason, you know, back up, this is Roman law now, so let me send him back to Herod. All right, so let me send him back to Pilate. Interesting, the following verse says, now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day, for before they had been enemies with each other. It's interesting that the Holy Spirit thought it was important to put that line in there. That here is, if you will, the enemies of Christ are now friends. Again, it's interesting when you look at friendships based on hate. Both of them are mocking Jesus. Both of them don't see the value of Jesus, and they're friends now. So, Pilate summons the chief priests and the rulers of the people and say to him, you brought this man to me as one who incites the people to rebellion. And behold, having examined him before you, I have found no guilt in this man regarding the charges which you make against him. Nor had Herod, for he sent him back to us. And behold, nothing deserving death has been done by him. Understand part of Roman court. In the United States, we have the judge just judges. We have our lawyers here, so correct me if I'm wrong. And so you have, of course, the defending attorney, the prosecuting attorney who presents evidences. In a Roman court, the judge could actually ask questions. He could actually interrogate the witnesses and actually, in some ways, ask for evidence. And so Pilate's here saying, I examined this man. I found nothing wrong with him. What about Herod? What did he say about Herod? Same thing. He said, Herod brought him back to me, and he can't find anything wrong. So, again, it's almost like going back to saying, why are you doing this? Why are you bringing this man? You're claiming sedition, and Herod, who you're saying Jesus is a Galilean, so surely Herod would know about him if he was causing sedition in Galilee. And apparently there's no problem. So why are you doing this? So it says, therefore, I will punish him and release him. It's interesting, that statement. Here's a man that has done nothing wrong. Herod, Pilate even says, I find no fault with him. Herod finds no fault with him. But literally, just to appease you, just to please you, I'll punish him. And it says, going back to John, Pilate then took Jesus and scourged him. That one statement says a lot. I'm sort of thankful that the Holy Spirit did not go into excruciating details of what scourging is. I know Nathan has talked a little bit about it. I'll try not to gross you out. Scourging literally is pulling the back off of a man. That's how I'll try to do it gently, but that's what it is. We talk about how under Jewish law, you could not beat a man to death. It was considered 40 lashes would actually whip a man to death. So they would do 39 lashes, which was literally is bring you to the point of death. And Romans did not have that law. They again would beat a man. They literally many times would beat him to death. Here, they had gotten so proficient, they knew how far they could go. So they'd beat Jesus. And we talk about the weapon they use. It's sometimes referred to as a cat of nine tails. is a whip with literally 9 whips in it. They would put balls, or metal balls, they would put pieces of glass, pieces of metal, so that it would actually tear the skin. And of course, the metal balls would then cause contusions. So, to appease the people, Pilate has Jesus beaten. And the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and put a purple robe on him, and they began to come up to him and say, "Hail, King of the Jews," and to give him slaps in the face. So here is Jesus being beaten, and now he's being mocked. What's the significance of purple? Sign of royalty. So again, they're mocking him as king, so they gave him a purple robe. Could you imagine what that's like on his back, especially when you take it off? Here's your skin trying to heal, scabs forming, and then you just rip them off. And a crown of thorns. I don't know if you ever look at roses and stuff. Could you imagine having, if you will, a rose bush put on your head? Your scalp is very sensitive, lots of blood vessels. So you can imagine the damage it's doing to his head, how much his face is bleeding. So everywhere Jesus goes, he's being mocked. He's now scourged. Remember, they slapped him. These soldiers are slapping him. And yet, Jesus is persevering. Jesus is going through all this for us. As we said before, remember, he reminded Peter, "I don't have to do this. I'm allowing this to happen. I'm allowing this to happen because it needs to happen." But remember, he talked about he can bring 12 legions of angels if he needed to. So let's continue on. So, Pilate came out again and said to them, "Behold, I bring him out to you so that you will know that I find no guilt in him." Jesus then came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." Could you imagine at this point what Jesus must look like? He's been slapped. He's been punched. He's been beaten. Isaiah talks about literally, when you look at him, you have to look away. That's how, I guess the word would be pathetic. That's how horrible he looks like. You know, here's a man that's, you know, again, when they beat him with the whip, probably whipping his face, whipping his body. Here he is, brutalized. And you have to wonder, did Pilate bring him out so that the people would take pity on Christ? Saying, "Surely this man has suffered enough. Surely this man has been punished enough." What's their response? "Crucify him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourself and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and by that law he ought to die, because he made himself out to be the Son of God." Therefore, when Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. And he entered the praetorium again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave no answer. So Pilate said to him, You do not speak to me? Do you know that I have authority to release you and have authority to crucify you?" Here's Pilate that's, I think, almost disgusted with the people. Saying, here's this man who's beaten. Your response is, "Crucify him. I find nothing wrong with him." It's interesting when he says, "If it's your law, you crucify him." But again, what do? They throw it back on him. The thing he gets back to is, they don't want the blame. They want Jesus dead, but they don't want to take the responsibility. They want to, at the end of the day, say, "Well, the Romans did it." And they mentioned him. They said, "This man claimed to be the Son of God." Apparently, that struck some sort of nerve in Pilate, because Pilate noticed there's something unique about Jesus. Even to Pilate, he could see it. And it says he's afraid. Surely this is an unusual man. That's when Pilate says, "You know, tell me who you are. Tell me the truth. Tell me who you are. Don't you know I have your life in my hands? I can save you or I can have you crucified." And what does Jesus say? You would have no authority over me unless it had been given to you from above. For this reason, he who delivered me to you has the greater sin. As a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, if you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. Everyone who makes himself out to be king opposes Caesar. Therefore, when Pilate heard these words, he brought out Jesus, sat down on the judgment seat in the place of the pavement, in Hebrew called Gabbatha. So Jesus says, in essence, he almost like relieves Pilate, saying, it's not your responsibility. It's because of the Jews. They made the decision. This is happening because it is meant to happen. And so Pilate, that's the second bell, sits in the judgment seat. As we read later, his wife warns him, saying, I had a dream of this man. What does Pilate do? It sort of shows the character of Pilate. Finally, he simply washes his hands. Literally washes his hands, sits in the judgment seat. Remember, under Roman law, when the decision is made, the judge is sitting. So he's sitting in fact, that's where we get the term, the judgment seat. Washes his hands and simply tells the Jews, have it done. Have Christ crucified. He makes a choice. He decides, even though this is an innocent man, for convenience, he allows him to be crucified. And that was the second bell. Thank you.